I'm Robin Young. It's Here and Now.
I, Barack Hussein Obama, do solemnly swear
that I will faithfully execute
the
office of President of the United States.
The office of President of the United States.
And will, to the best
the peaceful transition, or in this case, affirmation, happened again. Today, President Obama took the oath of office for his second term, his hand on two Bibles, one belonging to Martin Luther King Jr., one to President Lincoln. It was before a crowd of about 700,000 people and millions more listening at home.
Today, we continue a never-ending journey to bridge the meaning of those words with the realities of our time. For history tells us that while these truths may be self-evident, they have never been self-executing. That while freedom is a gift from God, it must be secured by His people here on earth. The patriots of 1776 did not fight to replace the tyranny of a king with the privileges of a few or the rule of a mob. They gave to us a republic, a government of and by and for the people, entrusting each generation to keep safe our founding creed.
We want to start today with a few minutes with Hans Nichols, White House correspondent for Bloomberg News, listening to portions of the president's speech and also getting Hans' opinion on it. And Hans, to start, you know, what was your overall thought? What jumped out at you?
Well, this one, just how specific he was in terms of policy and policy goals. I was expecting, and, you know, I cover the White House day in, day out, I was expecting more thematic speech. Not specifics on climate change, not him mentioning programs like Medicare and Social Security. So I was surprised, first off, by the level of specificity and how this was kind of a policy speech. The other aspect and the big takeaway is this is a collective call to action. This was a we speech, not a me speech. And now, a lot of the substance that the president talked about is more fertile ground for Democrats. But his approach to it, and this is the question, was it just a rhetorical approach, or is this actually going to be a substantive sort of the stylistic approach he takes is will he govern as we or will he govern as a Democrat? And this is, you know, this has not been entirely settled internally inside the White House.
Well, and he said prior to the speech that he was going to have two historical figures on his mind today, Martin Luther King Jr., of course, and Abraham Lincoln. Abraham Lincoln, who did not use – he used the word I once in his speech and really tried to bind wounds with his speech. Of course, very different time, the war coming to a close.
Well, the great thing about Lincoln's speech is Lincoln's second inaugural is everyone remembers with malice towards none and charity towards all. The preceding part of the speech is a very short speech, but if you read it down there at the Lincoln Memorial, the preceding two panels are all about how we were actually right, we being the North. So it closes with this, you know, this kind of balm and this healing notion, but the rest of it is like, you know, guys, we were on the right side of the history, and while we both prayed to the same God, obviously, you know, we're in the right.
Well, in fact, he invoked the Bible again to kind of talk about how when a country has wrongs, offenses was the word he used, you know, he sort of scolded the country in those 701 words. The president today speaking maybe almost 20 minutes. You mentioned climate change, very specific. Let's listen to a portion of the speech where he referenced that.
Some may still deny the overwhelming judgment of science, but none can avoid the devastating impact of raging fires and crippling drought and more powerful storms. The path towards sustainable energy sources will be long and sometimes difficult. But America cannot resist this transition. We must lead it. We cannot cede to other nations the technology that will power new jobs and new industries. We must claim its promise. That's how we will maintain our economic vitality and our national treasure. Our forests and waterways, our croplands and snow-capped peaks. That is how we will preserve our planet, commanded to our care by God.
So Hans Nichols, again, impassioned words on climate change. Some of his supporters disappointed that he didn't get the cap and trade in the first 4 years, seeming to be saying he will next. But what else did you hear? Where else did he get specific in maybe a surprising way?
Well, let me go back to the climate change.
Sure.
His post-election press conference, we asked him about that. And he kind of said, look, we tried that. There aren't the votes there in the Senate. This was when he gave up last time, which was sort of December of 2010. Memory went to Copenhagen, didn't work out. So before, there's always been the politics of this are too tough, and I'm not about to spend political capital on it. Today, what we heard, and this is why it's kind of sort of somewhat remarkable to me, is we're going to do this. We're going to go ahead, and if not, we're going to be left sort of on the, you know,
history's dustbin, right?
Yeah, right.
Well, and then there was another paragraph that came a couple of minutes later, in which there was a laundry list of things, maybe shrouded in the beautiful words of perhaps his speechwriter John Favreau from Massachusetts, but who knows, maybe written by the president as well. But when it was almost a laundry list of issues that he'd like to take up. And it started with one we don't think we've heard a president reference, our gay brothers and sisters.
So there a very fair point. Like the part about equal, there's that line about Selma and Stonewall and whatnot. When you talk to White House officials throughout the last 4 years, one of the big things they kept waiting and honestly pressing the president on was to come out publicly where everyone assumed the president's heart was. And so there's this wink and nod on, what the president believes about gay marriage, this and that. Now, they're going to have some difficult decisions coming up on which suits to join because all this is going to be settled, or not settled, but it's going to be brought before the Supreme Court. There's a Prop 8 challenge out in California. There's a question on what you do with DOMA. The progression of the president on gay rights has been more, he's publicly saying what everyone privately assumed that he believed. After he makes his pronouncements, the actual nitty-gritty of the legislation, this is going to happen at the state level, and this is going to happen at the courts.
Well, it's interesting you say that. I just want to have said one thing, because others would say, you have the behind-the-scenes info, but others would say that this is a president that has evolved on the issue of gay marriage, that he really was not comfortable with that issue. And now we hear a very different president. Let's listen to the paragraph in which he referenced not only gay rights, but women's rights, voters' rights, immigrants' rights. Let's listen.
It is now our generation's task to carry on what those pioneers began. For our journey is not complete until our wives, our mothers, and daughters can earn a living equal to their efforts. Our journey is not complete until our gay brothers and sisters are treated like anyone else under the law. For if we are truly created equal, then surely the love we commit to one another must be equal as well. Our journey is not complete until no citizen is forced to wait for hours to exercise the right to vote. Our journey is not complete until we find a better way to welcome the striving, hopeful immigrants who still see America as a land of opportunity, until bright young students and engineers are enlisted in our workforce rather than expelled from our country. Our journey is not complete until all our children, from the streets of Detroit to the hills of Appalachia to the quiet lanes of Newtown, know that they are cared for and cherished and always safe from harm.
A segment of President Barack Obama's second inaugural today. Hans Nichols is with us, White House correspondent for Bloomberg News. Hans, it did seem that that was an emotional moment for the president. I don't know if you felt that as well. And a way of saying gun control.
Yeah, I mean, look, the president's pretty clear that he's going to have an incremental and piecemeal approach, but he wants to do, he's going to keep at it until he gets it done. I mean, the politics of gun control are, if not impossible, very tough. And the president wants to, keep at this, where some of his other legislative strategy behind it is put together a bill like immigration, generally accepted that you do immigration with one big bill. You take care of guest workers, you take care of high-tech workers, you take care of the illegal immigrants that are here already, and you have better enhanced border security. You do that all in one sweep. Their strategy on gun control is to keep at it. And frankly, the politics on this for the White House is the public has shifted, and it's not like 60-40, but numbers after Newtown are more like 55-45 in favor of gun control. And as the president keeps hammering on this, as we lead into what we all assume is going to be, a midterm election where he gets bloodied and his party loses seats, they will continue to press this issue and say, where are the Republicans on this? And look for not necessarily to pick a fight on it, but to sharpen and explain differences.
Well, an impediment on that road could be the Democrats. As we're going to hear later in the program, the president doesn't have to run again. Many of them do. And he seemed to be calling on Democrats as well as Republicans to work together and not make the perfect the enemy of the good. Let's listen.
Being true to our founding documents does not require us to agree on every contour of life. It does not mean we all define liberty in exactly the same way or follow the same precise path to happiness. Progress does not compel us to settle centuries-long debates about the role of government for all time, but it does require us to act in our time. For now, decisions are upon us, and we cannot afford delay. We cannot mistake absolutism for principle, or substitute spectacle for politics, or treat name-calling as reasoned debate. We must act. We must act knowing that our work will be imperfect. We must act knowing that today's victories will be only partial, and that it will be up to those who stand here in 4 years and 40 years and 400 years hence to advance the timeless spirit once conferred to us in a spare Philadelphia hall.
Hans Nichols, it's been said that there are few memorable words from second inaugurals. All the stirring words are from the first inaugurals. You know, it's not what you can do for your country. And was there anything here that either do you think is going to stand out or do you think is going to assuage Republicans?
Well, not for rhetorical reasons, like, you know, malice towards none, charity towards all, but his line in his direct sort of address to equality for gay Americans, I think, will stand out. That to me, strikes me as something that's a departure from previous inaugurals and will kind of be a marker in history. But this was a specific speech. This was more of a policy speech. I mean, it was more of a policy speech than what he gave when he gave at the Democratic National Convention, where it was kind of a tour of what he wanted to accomplish and what he had accomplished, but it was much gauzier. I mean, you know, he signaled, he had that line that must make hard choices to reduce the cost of health care and the size of our deficit. You know, that's the line to Republicans. I was looking for that earlier. That's the line to say, look, we've got to do this. We will meet you on entitlement reform. And I could potentially bring some of my party over, but we've got to do this rationally and reasonably. And as you said earlier, don't let the perfect be the enemy of the good.
Yeah. Hans Nichols, White House correspondent for Bloomberg News. Thanks so much for helping us look at the president's words today.
Thanks for having me.
Welcome back to our coverage of President Barack Obama's second inauguration, being held, of course, on Martin Luther King Jr. Day. And in his speech, President Obama invoked past civil rights battles.
Just as it guided our forebears through Seneca Falls and Selma and Stonewall, just as it guided all those men and women, sung and unsung, who left footprints along this great mall, to hear a preacher say that we cannot walk alone, to hear a king proclaim that our individual freedom is inextricably bound to the freedom of every soul on earth.
Kerry Haney is Associate Professor of Political Science at Duke University, co-director of Duke's Center of the Study of Race, Ethnicity, and Gender in the Social Sciences. He joins us from Durham, North Carolina, where, Kerry, I know you were at an inaugural event with some Duke faculty. There's President Obama invoking the words, "We the people declare today that the most evident of truths, that all of us are created equal, is the star that guides us still." And then he went on to say how it guided forebears through Seneca Falls and Selma and Stonewall. Stonewall being the gay rights event that launched that movement, the riot at the Stonewall Inn. Selma, of course, the March on Selma, Seneca Falls, women's rights. What was the reaction in the room to the speech today?
It was a remarkable reaction and different. I was with the Assembly Group 4 years ago and a different reaction this time around. As your clip reference, the president did acknowledge the civil rights agenda and the historical moment of it being King Day. 4 years ago, we didn't hear those references from the president, and the stark contrast today what we heard, these references to civil rights and equal protection and equal rights.
Well, and it wasn't, of course, the same day. That's only happened, twice in history. But you're saying just to have heard some of that, and it went even further today. Civil rights leader Merle Evers Williams, the widow of slain civil rights leader Medgar Evers, becomes the first woman and the first layperson to ever deliver an invocation at a presidential inauguration. And Rachel Maddow is tweeting, "I want her to do it from here on out." It was chilling. She invoked our ancestors, and then she called them, I have to get this here because it was such a beautiful line, "Their visions still inspire us. They are a great cloud of witnesses, unseen by the naked eye, but all around us, thankful their living was not in vain." And that just, your reaction to that?
Quite amazing and very powerful words. And I'll also mention the poem read by an openly gay American is a first, I believe. Mm-hmm. And in some respects, the whole inauguration event was an acknowledgement of the president's coalition, the coalition that brought him to power 4 years ago and reelected him this time around. And I think it's also, as the president so eloquently put it, I think, this is the present and the future of our country. To talk about immigrants and women and people of color in the way that he did, and to embrace those groups, I think, is a reflection of where we are as a country today.
He did send a message to his detractors. Republicans are skeptical of his plan. He did say, "We've never relinquished our skepticism of central authority. We haven't succumbed to the fiction that all ills can be cured through government alone." He put in the phrases, personal responsibility and hard work. But that was after saying, we care for the vulnerable. A free market only thrives when there are rules to ensure competition. So we're African Americans in particular who suffer, for instance, wage inequality more than any other population in the country. Were you hearing things you wanted to hear that you felt you hadn't heard before on that level?
Absolutely. I think this was the first time that this president has forcefully spoken words that embrace that agenda and spoken to many of the people who, again, helped elect him to office. And I'll disagree slightly with your previous guest. I think it was very much a me speech, or at the very least a my agenda speech. And it was framed as a we speech. But what I notice is that the president, his election agenda, his campaign agenda, he didn't move one inch from that agenda. He talked about the rich having to pay more and sacrificing more. He talked about not having privileges for the few. And as you just mentioned, gay rights, immigration reform, living wage, protecting the social safety net. So I think it was very much a my agenda speech, and he framed it, very skillfully framed it, as a we speech and tried to bring the country together, but together around his agenda. And I think that's exactly what the African-American community, other racial and ethnic minorities were wanting to hear.
What's the reality, though? Because as you well know, within the African-American community, President Obama has plenty of critics. Dr. Cornel West, the activist and author, has criticized the president for using Martin Luther King's Bible today. He said he hasn't embraced King's black freedom struggle. Harvard Law professor Randall Kennedy, who wrote the book about race and the Obama presidency, told the New York Times the president's been diffident about African-American issues. We heard this, in the last 4 years. I mean, I can't imagine. It's hard to imagine the line someone has to walk when you're expected to serve all the people and then also serve perhaps one segment of the people more. Do you think things change going forward?
I think they do. The president is secure in not having to run again. Some of those re-election worries that he may have faced in the first term are no longer there. And some of the criticisms coming from Professor West and others are petty, quite honestly. I mean, the issue of the Bible, I think, is petty and not worthy of comment. But I think it is a serious critique that in the first term the president did not pay enough attention to issues that plague poor people and minority people.
Well, we should say African Americans making strides on the Republican side. Republican Tim Scott, South Carolina's new senator, the first African American from the South since Reconstruction. He was appointed after Jim DeMint resigned. Going forward, just what do you see in the next 4 years, very briefly?
I think it's going to be a conflictual 4 years. I think the president will stand his ground. I think he'll win some battles. And I predict that the Democrats will make progress in the midterm elections because of the president standing his ground and having a strong agenda.
Kerry Haney, Associate Professor of Political Science at Duke University, as we listen to the Brooklyn Tabernacle Choir from today. Thanks so much.
Thank you.
News is next, here and now.